Hey, I'm John Bollinger with PremierGuitar.com. We are backstage in Memphis, Tennessee with Billy Duffy of the band The Cult. We're they're on their Electric 13 tour. Billy, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to be here.
Hey, since we're in amp land, why don't you tell us a little bit about the amps you're using?
Well, nothing really that fancy going on. I got a pretty much standard British designed, American owned, and Chinese made Vox. That I've started using, that seems to be working pretty good for me on this tour. Just got a couple of reissue slope front Marshalls that tend to project the sound up. They're powered by a couple of Dave Friedman's amps at the back there that I bought with a lot of money. They were expensive but worth it. They're like the best Marshall you ever heard. And a trusty old Roland JC120 that I've used since the 80s to get a lot of that early, that kind of high transistor sound with the chorus.
Sure, like Firewoman and...
Well, parts of Firewoman, like the intro to Firewoman, all the pick parts, the intro to She Sells Sanctuary, Rain. I've used them throughout my career, but not on the Electric album at all, which is kind of ironic. So I don't use it at all for the first half of the set. And that just brings out a lot of the highs, but on its own it wouldn't sound very good. But you have to mix it, you know. So the guy out front blends. So basically I use any two from those three amps.
So Billy, tell us a little bit about the guitars you're playing on this tour.
This leg, I just uncovered this black custom that they made for me in a custom shop a while ago. It was supposed to be a signature model. And it kind of didn't work out for a bunch of different reasons, but it's basically kind of the neck profile I like, the weight that I like. Doesn't come with any pick guards or that, no pickup covers. Basically, I like a Les Paul to look like all the guys who used them in the 70s when I was a kid looked. Mm-hmm. So they used the Grovers. You know, I like them to just be to work and be effective and kind of bomb-proof. I'm not really that much of a collector, just these particular kind of knobs. I don't even know what they're called, but I use these type of ones. And aged nickel hardware. It's a nice weight, great response. And this one's kind of leapt out from the back of the pack. So I was running a gold top for most of this tour. And the pickup basically gave out on it. So luckily I was in Manchester, England, where I have a home. And this was in the closet. So it came out the closet, even though it's straight, and it's now the number one. It sounds amazing. So I'm in talks with Gibson to do maybe the custom shop guys are great. They treat me real good, and we're talking about maybe doing an artist. They do this like artist. It's not a signature guitar because I've got a Gretsch signature one, which we're going to get to in a minute. But it's just like artist choice based upon. So this looks like the one from the front of Sonic Temple.
Right.
But the irony, and I'll explain the story, the irony is the guitar on the front of Sonic Temple is black, but on the tour I never used a black one, but because by the time we did the tour, I took the finish off the front of it. So for the whole tour and subsequent last 20 odd years, it was a black Les Paul with the front taken off as a kind of a tribute to a guitar player called Mick Ronson, who was very inspirational to me in the 70s, and still is. And so that was kind of the story, like actually the guitar, and I had to borrow it, the guitar on the front of Sonic Temple, but was a black one. And I've had so many of them, it gets a bit confusing what's what. But anyway, so this is a great guitar, I'm using it now, I like it a lot.
Do you remember what year that the original black one was?
Nothing very vintage. They were all whatever I could get my hands on at the time. I'm trying to think now. 75, 77, or something like that, or 77, 79. Oh. Nothing particularly, you know, sexy.
Does this one sound similar, or?
I think it sounds better.
Oh, really?
To be honest, yeah. Yeah, they sound better. I mean, you know, when, you know, guitars don't always, old ones don't always sound the best.
Right.
You know, it just depends on the individual guitar, the bit of wood, the day, you know, a bunch of factors, but... you know, yeah, that's that one. It's very similar in weight and a feel.
Okay.
Number two, this is one that's pretty much heavily featured on my website, which I've got a website, surprises me, billyduffy.com. Despite myself, I have a website. And this is the guys in the custom shop made this for me. It's very, very light. There's a whole story on the website. If you visit it, it explains in incredible detail. If you ever need to go to sleep, you want to read that. And it's a really nice, it's based on a 58. It was made, literally, it was bits of wood about 6 months ago. And I'm using it on the tour. It is very, very light. And same thing, there's no fanciness, just nickel and this and that. And I just did the backs dark, though. I didn't like that reddish back that they do on real 58s for my taste. It's a bit too, you know, I like them plain. So not much, little bit of flame on it. You know, and a lemon drop finish. And it's a great guitar. Sounds a lot darker than that one, which is great, you know, because they don't all sound the same. This one's much more dark. So thank you, Gibson, for that one. The custom shop guys, Steve and Rick and Et Al. What we have here is my signature White Falcon, which I sort of helped design with the guys at Gretsch Fender a couple of years ago. And it's great. It's based upon a Gretsch that I got when I first started with the Cult in 1983. And it was the one I used in the video, all the videos for Sanctuary, and played on all the Love album and all those songs from the band. And it's basically a 75 based Baldwin era Gretsch, which wasn't really what I would call a bespoke period for Gretsch. They're not really that good. I just got a good one. It's based upon that, and I just ironed out a lot of the problems with it. Everything was great in terms of the neck. They basically x-rayed, measured, and went through a fine-tooth comb with the guitar. And it's based on a 70s one. They changed the truss rod on a 70s Gretsch. For some reason, adjusted through the back. So this is there just aesthetically. Believe it or not, they used to adjust there, which was an idea that we left in the 70s. And it just I came up with the idea of doing it with silver sparkle. It has smaller F-holes than all the Gretsches they're making at the moment. They have the 50s style ones, which are actually quite dominant. And then the guitar's basically got a pickup that Joe at Gretsch, Joe Carducci, who is the Mandarin of Gretsch, he describes it as reverse engineered. What that means really in English is that it is, back in the 80s, I wasn't getting enough output out of the pickup on the guitar. One of the things with these 70s Gretsches, the output from the pickups was pitifully low. And I was trying to do gigs and I was using the Les Paul and this, and it was just almost impossible to get any balance out of the two guitars. So in the end, Seymour Duncan, who was a mate of mine, the pickup manufacturer from California, made me one. And I sent him a sound which was basically, I think I sent him the sound of like a Telecaster with a humbucker in it. And I wanted the chime of a Gretsch, but I wanted the clout of a Les Paul at the bottom end. So that's the idea of this pickup. Pretty high output, you know. It's basically a guitar if you really want to attempt some rock on a Gretsch and you want to use a full size one. This is a guitar, and it's been great. I'm really happy with it. I use them live.
And you've got foam in the body, right?
Yeah. I fill it up with foam. They've been filled up with various items over the years: t-shirts, towels, makeup, foam.
Just stuff it through the sound hole?
Yeah. They just stuff it in there. And it tends to keep it from getting too much nasty feedback, and that's about it. So, you know, it's got the bridge is pinned, obviously, because I do a lot of palm muting, so you know I'd always have to do that. So the guitar comes with a pinned thing.
Okay, so it's not going to move.
I don't know. I don't know how you really play one that's not, but. That's it, basically. That's the guitar. This guitar is a regular production guitar plucked from a box off a wall. It was no. I have a couple of prototypes that I'm keeping at home, but these two are just regular fries. They have no particular exciting serial number. There's no, which I wanted to show people that there's nothing fancy. It's exactly what you get, you know.
Right. So if I was to buy one,
This is what you get, and you know, you have to dial the guitars into your own personal playing style in terms of the obvious setup on any guitar, but right. That's about it. It has a zero fret, mm-hmm. which is the 70s ones do. None of the recent Gretsches have zero frets. which supposedly helps intonation. It's got my name on it. Very exciting. On a little plate there, out of metal. And it's silver, so, you know, looks like a, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I love the silver.
It's like a wedding cake. Well, mostly they're gold, and I think, you know, they're kind of, if you want, they're all gold, so yeah. I kind of went this route.
Yeah, it's classic.
And that's it, mate. That's it for this tour. Very simple. Gretsch, yep. Les Paul, Electric 13.
Billy, tell me a little bit about your pedal board.
It's very kind of old school, very, very sort of simple. I would call it kind of, it's something that can be, you know, if something pretty much breaks, we can get spare parts, which is the idea of it. It's pretty useless to me if I'm flying to like South America and something gets banged up. If I can't get a thing to repair it and it's got some guy in a shed in like Montana is the only guy that can fix it, it's kind of useless. So I that's just basically, I've always used Roland Boss pedals for delay since I was young. I did have a period where I used rack mounted ones in the middle of the 80s when, like every other guitar player, I had a rack mounted system. But essentially a lot of the pedals were just in a drawer, in a rack, so they were still the same pedals, they were just put in a drawer and off stage.
And you were still controlling them?
I was from the floor. Yeah, I used to have a thing and a MIDI controller that scrolled through each song in the set. And as time passed, it just became impractical for us to do certain gigs without it. So in the end, I was caught between like having a compromise. When we were doing a big tour, I could have the full rig. When we were doing these flying gigs and the things that were in various parts of Eastern Europe and wherever, it just wasn't practical to take all that equipment. So in the end, I just boiled down to building a couple of these rigs. And, you know, there's nothing fancy. Got a couple of overdrives, a couple of line level boosts. That's a prototype that Scott, you cheater from Dunlop's, get me. It's like a top boost, basically.
Okay.
That silver one with nothing written on it.
Okay.
You know, that's what it does.
It's going to be a Dunlop. It's like a prototype with Dunlop, yeah. Top boost.
Yeah. The Wah-Wah pedal, while we're on the Dunlop tip, the Wah-Wah pedal's kind of custom made for me by them. It's just the ones that doesn't have a click. And it just boosts the level like a lot of them do these days. So every time I use it, it automatically boosts the level because I don't like losing signal. Sure. And Wah-Wah's just suck the life out of it unless you... So automatically it gets a 10 dB boost when I play it.
Great. So you go from the Wah-Wah to the tuner to the noise suppressor?
Yeah. I've got a tuner just in case. I'm terrible at tuning. I'm not really good at it. I'm deaf. Yeah, I've got a noise gate because I like to run things really hot and, you know, with all this hardware going on it, you need to keep... Certain songs, you need it to grab it from howling. There's a phaser... it's a flanger. No, there's a flanger, and that's part of the early system from like we're going back to like 1983.
Right.
That's the analog old Boss pedal, that the DM2 that they don't make anymore. Hmm. I never use it on its own. I only use it on a conjunction with the DM3 there.
Right.
And that sets up the kind of sanctuary, and the sound for. Like the beginning of Firewoman.
Right.
There's a certain kind of interplay between the way I pick the strings, where I pick them, the effects, how the sweep of the... I used at one time, way back, I think I used a phaser as well, but I kind of found that just these days got in the way. And also a big part of that sound is the chorus from the JC120, which is a stereo chorus, and that's always mic'd, which you've probably seen, there's two mics in it for a reason, and it's panned through the PA. So yeah. You get the sweep.
Huge.
Yeah, you know, basically it simulates the front of the thing. It was always just based around trying to make the guitar sound as big as possible. When I didn't have a second guitar player or when we started, you know. And then for a couple of tours, we actually had a keyboard player. Two of our biggest tours, Sonic Temple and Ceremony, we didn't have a second guitar player, just had a keyboard player who did basically... One hand did kind of some key parts and the other hand did a lot of like fake guitar parts. It was kind of cool because, you know, it was I saw Ozzy Osbourne do it once. I was like, where's that weird noise coming from when a guitar player, I think it was Jakey Lee, was in the band. Mm. I was like, there's something going on. And of course, there was an invisible man behind the curtain playing keyboards, filling the sound out. And we hired that guy. And
was he behind the curtain or out front?
At first, you know, it's a funny story, right? I'll tell you, this is funny. When we hired him, we kept him behind the curtain. And he was a good-looking guy. He used to be in the Heavy Metal Kids. He was in Uriah Heep. He's a guy named John Sinclair, who I think he's retired now. He was really good fun, English guy, right? And then we hired him, and we had him behind the curtain because that was kind of how we were rolling at that point. And then the next tour, we thought, oh, well, we'll bring him out and we'll put him on stage. So he shows up for rehearsals. He's put on like 30 pounds. His hair was, he looked like the Unibomber who'd been like eating donuts. And we were like, dude, like, when you were behind the curtain, you looked great. So we had to put him on the treadmill, bleached his hair, made him wear a black suit. And that was a ceremony tour. And John Sinclair, bless him. I think he's retired now. Last thing I heard, he's retired and lives in a castle in Scotland with great Irish wolfhounds. God bless him. And what else do we need to know? I mean, there's a three switcher. So I can pick between each of the amps on and off as I so desire. Again, a commercially one made available at any local guitar center. You can purchase that for $120. And I did when my fancy one broke. Another delay. I think it's a DM something. I don't even know what it is. It's just got a longer delay. You know, it's just like 400. So I think that's 400 milliseconds, 800 milliseconds, and then that's longer. Mm-hmm. And then that's a boost. That's a very fancy delay. I like that. It's my favourite overdrive pedal. It's probably the most important pedal on the board.
Who makes that?
That's made by a guy out in a shed in Detroit. Actually, it's called Kalamazoo. And it's made by a guy who goes by the name of Love Pedal. And he's out of Detroit. And I really like it. I suppose people might have heard of those pedals called Klon pedals. Mm. The Centaur or whatever that people are spending like a grand on. Well, I wasn't... Again, for me, for live, I can't be buying some fancy piece of kit that's going to break when it gets thrown around in an aircraft. So I just found that those really do a tremendous job. That's the best pedal overdrive, in my opinion, going. And then I've got a Tube Screamer. Of which, you know, sometimes they're modified, sometimes they're not. It depends. If they sound any good, I don't need to modify them.
Right. Do you ever run them both together?
Only when I'm in a bad mood. That's usually about the time that they go on together, or by accident. Because sometimes I can't see what I'm doing. I mean, depending on the lighting, to be honest, there's a lot of false. You know, half the time I'm looking at the floor. The downside of doing it yourself is that it detracts from the performance, but as I don't sing, you know, I don't really feel it's fair to, you know, I should be able to drive and play, but it's a bit distracting trying to hit three pedals on at once. A lot of the times they're stacked, so I can hit two on and off at once.
Oh yeah,
you know, a lot of the times I do that, three even. See that one? Get that, that was fancy, wasn't it? Look, you want to try doing that? Bingo. Of course, doing it while you're holding a big guitar, which you can't see, and then the lights are doing their thing, is a bit tricky. But yeah, they're useful. That's about it, man. It's simple stuff, you know. The rest of it's just down to, I guess, attitude and in the fingers, you know.
Right. When you're writing songs, do you write on electric or acoustic?
I mostly electric, and I've hardly ever written a song on an acoustic. I can't even. I think I wrote one song on a piano once, which was on a Ceremony album. I think a song called If, maybe. I can't remember. When I was messing around on the piano, which I can't play hardly. And yeah, it's just the electric guitar.
So when you're home, your home rig, is it basically a little bit like this for writing?
I don't need all the effects. I just have a little simple little setup. I've got a little mini Roland. I just basically need simple setup, really, because it's just initially about getting the idea out of your head through your fingers and get it recorded. So, you know, the less stuff I get in the way from when I get the idea is kind of how I do my part of the writing process, you know.
Great. Well, Billy, thanks so much for joining us. This has been great.
So welcome, man. It was cool. It's no problem. Yeah. I'm happy to explain the not very deep mysteries of my guitar rig.
Great. Well, this is John Bollinger with Premier Guitar. Thanks very much.